Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I don't know about you, but I look at this fixture, Argentina against Namibia, right? And there's one thing I think more than anything else would truly deeply surprise me if it happened during playing of this rugby match. Please.
Johnny Wilkinson scores the winning try.
That would surprise me, yes. That would surprise me. Have you got any other guesses?
At the end, they award the Webb Ellis Cup, which was there for this game, to the loser of this match.
I'm delighted that they brought it to this game.
Yeah, me too.
I am very, very glad that it was here to mark the fine, fine occasion, Argentina 63, Namibia 3.
I'm glad that at least one occasion where Michael McKenzie was playing got to see the Webb Ellis Cup.
Yeah, and like, this is the actual Webb Ellis Cup, right? That was there present in 87. It will be there present in the, you know, 2087 World Cup, when that rolls around in 4 years' time, by the speed time seems to be moving for me as I grow older.
And especially because 100 years on from 1987, 100 is now a really... In fact, it is a multiple of four, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Welcome to the Squidge Maths podcast.
I was going to take the piss out of you before thinking through my joke.
It backfired on you.
Is that a thing that that surprised you?
Tell you what, yeah, you not being better at me than maths, because I am bad at maths.
I'm better at you than English, though.
Doubt it, mate. I know both languages.
What did you get in GCSE maths?
I got a C. No, I got a B. I got a B. I scraped the B, and I don't know how it happened.
We both got Bs despite Miss Van Marley.
I'm glad you've named her. She was an awful human being and a worse maths teacher.
She was fucking
horrid. Let's move along. The thing that would desperately surprise me, right, at this game between Argentina and Namibia is, and I agree with Bob Simmons on commentary here, if there's a lot of blue in the crowd.
Yes. I love that he said that. He said, there's a lot of blue in the crowd. The Argentines clearly have a huge travelling support. And it's like, hang on a minute. Hang on. Think about what you're saying here, old Bobby.
Not only do both teams play in blue primarily, both teams play in blue in this game.
Yeah.
And yet he is surprised to see a lot of blue in the crowd. And also, right, this World Cup's been played in France, who also play in blue.
Yeah, exactly.
So the three shirts that are most likely to come up are all blue. This game being played in, played in Marseille. I thought I played in Montpellier for a second, who also play in blue. It's just any shirt that is likely to occur at this game, pretty much blue.
Probably blue. Yeah. It's one of those things from El Bobby where, much like me trying to call you out for 100 not being a multiple of four earlier, it's one of those things that you say it and then realize, oh, shit.
Yeah. And I love Bob Simmons. We've defended him a lot on this podcast.
Absolutely.
You know, I hope he mows his lawn incredibly well next to Andrew Ford next time he does it, which will never leave me now because I have no idea what he looks like. And yes, this disembodied voice.
And yes, I can picture him mowing a lawn.
Yep. That's the only activity I can picture him doing. I picture him being in a broom shed to do the red button commentary for like Dragons against like Sale in the Challenge Cup on a Friday night in 2009. And I can picture him mowing his lawn with Andrew Ford looking out the window going, huh, that's Bob Simmons.
He commentated on this game of this, where this try that I clipped up was scored. You know what's funny, actually? Earlier, I watched one of Andrew Ford's most recent videos, which was like a thing on worst kicks in rugby. And he put in that Kevin Morgan one from the Wales-Japan game that we watched.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, where have you seen that then, mate? So clearly we have done something
influence
to aid him. Yes.
Influence.
In return for him coming on this podcast,
this
we have
podcast,
given helped him out a little bit in his video making.
This podcast and it might be a bad idea to say it so early in the pod, is stupid.
Yeah.
I'm always really glad when it helps someone in some form. You know, like whenever I've done videos,
ever happened?
Well, every now and again when I'm doing a video, like when I was doing the Romania video, which is a work in progress, it won't be out by the time you're listening to this, but it will be out hopefully soon afterwards. You know, I'm hoping to have it done really, we're hoping to have it done really soon.
Yeah, damn right we are.
Sorry,
going out there like, oh yeah, my channel. You could have said that for the first three years of the bloody channel, but I'm here now. Dickhead.
I am used to doing promo stuff on my own. But we're hoping
to have
that done soon.
Refer to them as your brother.
The thing
Will's
is,
videos.
Though, right, when it's just the two of us and I'm saying we, I am only talking to the audience, whereas I'm used to talking to you here, right?
Yeah.
So, like, there is something weird. There's this weird, like, disconnect.
I'm being a self-righteous bellend. I know that was an honest
mistake. You're very good at it as well.
But... and I'm going to keep doing it until you're correct.
The point is,
giving me
right,
the credit I deserve.
Having watched the 1987 Rugby World Cup back in full was very useful for writing that Romania video, which I did on my own.
You did do that on your own.
So that was, the research on that was pretty much mine. We did some looking over like their best players together. We had an afternoon where we just went over a bunch of Romania games.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did a lot of like research and reading up and like watching back old Romania games and like,
yeah, 80s, you're a lot better at
trying to get stuff in the 50s and stuff, which tell you what, bloody lot of Romanians happening in the 50s.
There's a few Romanians have happened.
Yeah, good on them. So, one game that will probably never be useful for us is Argentina 63, Namibia 3.
I don't know. There is one thing that comes up in this game, which I now think might be a point of reference for me. There is one player that comes up, but we're going to get to that guy.
Okay. So, this is, I think, interesting primarily because it is a big part of that Argentina journey. You know, or if you are the New York Times, are you the New York Times?
Not today.
If you are the New York Times, however, if you were, it would be a big moment for Argentina because they spelled Argentina in their headline Argentina.
Okay. And the headline was they play in this game or did Argentina play in this game?
They are. Argentina going to play in this game. They're always in the future tense. That R-E-A-R-E Argentina is they're always in the future tense. That's like the next Argentina's next game. Whereas like there have been China.
So it will be Argentina.
Point is, the headline was simply Argentina beat Namibia 63-3. The fact that they got a third of the words wrong is truly exceptional.
Yes.
They do indeed win 63-3. This was interesting because it was a big part of that, that Argentina journey, that kind of big growth, you know, the moment that triggered Argentina becoming a tier one nation was this World Cup. And this was kind of the in-between stage that no one talks about. People talk about the win over France in particular, then they talk about Scotland and Ireland, which are to come, spoilers. They talk about the third place game. People kind of forget about the Namibia game. But there's an interesting point that Murray Mechstead makes in commentary, which is if Argentina are really going to be one of the big boys, and there's an interesting point that Murray Mechstead makes in commentary, is a brand new sentence that no one's ever said before, but if Argentina are going to be considered one of the big boys, they should be putting 50 on Namibia.
Yeah.
Like, if they want to be taken seriously as a tier one nation, as a big team, if they want to be taken seriously as contenders to go deep in this World Cup, they want to be winning this game by 50 plus points.
That's an absolutely valid thing to say, considering Namibia were brilliant against Ireland, as we've spoken about before, and against France, whilst they still got hammered in that game, they definitely put up a fight and they had loads of positives that they could have taken out of that game. And if not for the whole thing of Losper and Vessels going off injured, that game could have been a lot closer. And Namibia, now that they have that slightly depleted squad, Argentina absolutely should be putting 60 points on them as they do.
Yeah. And they also, I think, in kind of a, I guess, a statement moment, they prevent Namibia scoring a try.
Yeah.
You know, because they did manage one against France and then they played really well against Ireland and managed
Namibia
to
don't
pair
come close
them.
To scoring one, do they?
No, they don't look at any moment that they're going to.
Yeah, or even breaking the line.
Namibia are probably good for one more three-pointer than they score.
Yeah, I think that's valid. They turn one down.
Yeah, I think if it was 63-9 or 63-6, you go like, that's a fair reflection.
Agreed.
63-3 is very, very mildly harsh. We're talking like 2% harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge mismatch in teams, especially considering it's not Namibia's strongest that they put out, that they have a couple of injuries, and clearly there's a couple of people with knocks that they're going, right, we'll sit you on the bench, or we'll rotate you at this time. Because, and I think that it is more of a thing for the very bottom seeds in the World Cup, that they're, a lot of them do like to give their whole squad a run out whilst they're there, whilst they're on tour, especially considering these lads are all amateurs at this stage, or most of them are amateurs.
Yeah,
you saw the Namibian squad.
Like 85% probably amateurs.
Yeah, exactly. So if you cast aside the likes of Jacques Berger and Eugene Jantjies, you're looking at the majority of this 15 that's playing in this game being amateurs at this point. A few of them go on to get contracts, but.
Yeah, a lot of them were playing university rugby.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few people on scholarships and so on that have managed to get the next best thing, you know, in that they're receiving some money for their rugby ability, but they're not necessarily professionals.
Yeah.
There's a big kind of university contingent throughout them. So yeah, it's a interesting point. It's a bit like if you look at the upcoming World Cup where we have Japan playing Chile and everyone wants Chile to do well at that World Cup, right? Everyone wants them to stand up and really perform. But there is a little bit of you, right? That if Chile put up a massive fight against Argentina and England, but rolled over and Japan slaughtered them by 60 points.
Yeah.
You would, that would kind of be preferable because Japan are in the place that Argentina are in now, where they kind of need to take a step forward to be taken seriously.
Yes.
And yes, Argentina
would beat
France.
You don't want the upset to come against them just yet, do you?
No. And it was something about Japan in the last World Cup in 2019, where they beat Ireland and they beat Scotland, but they also really struggled against Samoa and they struggled much more than they should have against Russia.
Yeah.
And it isn't something that they conquered yet, is that kind of putting teams away, putting teams to the sword. Arguably, Wales and Scotland never accomplished that either, but that's a separate point. But this is like, I think, a big statement for Argentina in that they managed to do that and they managed to just take total control and just go, no, we are better than you. We are superior as a rugby nation. We are going to smash you.
And it's sad to kind of say it, but like, I actually really enjoyed watching this game, even though it was Argentina just really taking Namibia out and battering them. And I really like this Namibian team. And there were bits that they did in this game that I really enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. A big part of me would have liked to see them get the scoreboard, score some tries and so on. But above all, do you know what I wanted to see from Namibia?
I know exactly what you wanted to see from Namibia. Blue shirts. Oh, yes. Vip boy.
No, 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 no. Vip boy wasn't fucking playing. What the fuck is all that about?
So, Haki Tosselman, the coach for Namibia.
Dead to me.
Who is also the youngest coach at the World Cup at just 34 years of age. Which, to say that Alan Wynne-Jones was actually older than him in 2007 is quite the statement. Very young coach, no idea what he's doing, probably didn't work out, you know, you've got to write like the names of your best players on the team sheet.
Yeah,
so he just
he
thought like him, guess who, and you just fold them down when you guess people.
If you write down Dion Mouton on your team sheet, he's the guy who's playing 14 for you.
Yeah, he didn't realise that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, no, he tried to write Brian Habana and it didn't work. After the game, I mean, the first thing he said was, you know, Argentina played very professionally, but it was a game it was too far for us, which I think is fair, you know.
Yes, agreed.
I'm saying it's a largely part-time team, and he felt it was just a task too far for them. But his big statement was, we really, really want to win that game against Georgia the following week. Okay. And he was very upfront in the fact that he wanted the rest players for that game. He wanted to make sure that they were, you know, in the best possible position to win that, considering they had a four-day turnaround.
That is a horrid turnaround, in fairness.
Yep. So they had 6 days coming in from the previous game and 4 days going into the next game.
Oh, that's awful. That's too many games of rugby to play inside a week and a half.
Yeah, so in, what are we talking, 10 days of playing 3 games?
Yeah, that's horrid. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not like Vitboy will really do much in a game like this. Other than maybe, I don't know, potentially have a crack.
He would probably have at least one crack.
Yeah. And then it has to get subbed off. So, look, I'm not going to come out here and say I totally understand his reasoning for not picking Vitboy, because we're 16 years down the line. I want to watch that boy play. I don't want to see him get rested to potentially probably lose to Georgia, which definitely does happen. Like, I don't care about that. I want to see Vip Boy.
Yeah, and look, so Melwick Africa disappears off the face of the earth by all accounts after this. Like, his Wikipedia page states he's been absent since the 2007 Rugby World Cup, which sounds like he didn't come into school.
That's really ambiguous, isn't it?
What happened to him? Where's Melwick Africa gone?
Melwick Africa is one of the most rugby player names ever.
It's so they haven't got players licensed on Rugby Challenge as a name.
Did you hear Murray Mekstead taking the piss out of his name?
Yeah, because he's from Africa and he's called Africa.
Where he said, oh, his name's Africa. Oh, mate, what's you called? Africa. Where you from? Africa. Ha ha ha. Get it? And he actually said that to Bob Simmons. And Bob Simmons was like, okay, it's anyway. And then he was like, oh, where's your dad from? Oh, also Africa. Good one. Shut up, Murray Mekstead, you bell end.
So, can I give you some exclusives on Merrick Africa?
Okay, I'd love some exclusives, considering how he's absent he is.
He's been absent since 2007. Do you want to know where he's been?
What does it mean? I do want to know where he's been.
Melwick Africa is now the senior taxation officer at the Namibia Inland Revenue.
AI or LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
Okay.
He now works for the Ministry of Finance. And I know it's right. Him because his profile picture is him singing the anthem for Namibia.
Yeah, there's not many people out there cutting about called Melwick Africa, are there?
Who live and work in Namibia.
Yeah. Although that said, there's a surprising amount of Ryan Vitboys on Instagram. Well, okay, I've been trying to find the guy.
What was the name of the England scrum half in the 80s who was a bell end who talked about dodging taxes all the time?
Richard Harding?
Richard Harding, yeah. Talking about how he hated taxes.
He was the one in property.
Yeah, and hates taxes.
I don't remember him hating taxes, but that sounds
right. No, he hated taxes. Okay. Let's start that rumour. So can we get Melwick Africa to as a taxation officer, which is not the job I had a winger down for, but hey, you know, the most exciting, thrilling players in the field, also taxation officer, which he had stopped by the time of this World Cup. By this time, he was a junior officer. Yeah, and he's gone up the ranks since. 18 years. 18 years he's been working for the Ministry of Finance in Namibia.
All right, can you?
Yeah, so can we get him, to arrest someone? Maybe he's who arrested Bernard Laporte.
Holy shit, maybe he is.
They were in the same pool. Did he play against him in that France-Namibia game?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, he didn't. No, he came off the bench. Yeah, he came off the bench.
Oh, shit. Wow.
So maybe he was there and he carried Laporte off.
He's trying to just
sniffed blood. We know Melwick Africa is a remarkable superhuman who can smell bad taxes from a mile off. So he was sat on the bench and he could just get this whiff coming off the French coaching box of bad taxes.
Bad taxes.
And he went, huh.
That's the deodorant Bernard Laporte wears. Bad taxes.
Which, in hindsight, was a terrible choice when he's also doing financial misgivings.
Yeah. It's going to absolutely reek with Melrick around.
He really should have chosen just, like, lovely well-doing.
Yes, exactly.
You know, look, all I'm saying, if you're committing a crime, do not wear a deodorant that suggests the crime.
I imagine Melwick Africa was trying to sap money from the working man to give all the money in the world to Andy Gomesson.
But that's the thing, right? All the money in the world, at least some of that must be like taxable.
Yeah, I guess.
So did Melwick Africa have to deduct all the money in the world when Caris Williams had it?
Yeah. Well, bear in mind at this point it's with Will Greenwood.
Yes, it is.
In 2007, it somehow gets to Gomesson.
However,
I think Melwick's in on this.
I think what's happening here, right, is Will Greenwood...
He's taxing him fucking loads.
Yeah, all the money in the world. He is currently transferring it somewhere in here to Andy Gomesson, his, you know, now England, not teammate, but has taken his place in the team, you know, whatever. Not his place, but taken a place in the team that he used to play for.
What's that, Will? You're a pundit, commentator and analyst? We'll have to tax you for all three of them, I'm afraid.
So then this is when Melwick Africa handles the transfer of money personally between Greenwood and Gomesson, at which point he shaves 20% off the top in taxes. But the thing he doesn't realise while he's doing it, that 20% is going directly to Bernard Laporte.
It's because he's got shares in that deodorant.
Yeah. Greenwood is doing also really well for him.
Yeah.
It's just, there's such a huge range of Burn of the Port deodorants.
Yeah.
Get Michelac to do a cross kick, the fragrance.
Yeah, sure.
So, look, that is Melrick Africa. I think he's an important character to keep an eye on. Okay. Namibia winger, who is also the Mr. Taxman that the Beatles sung about.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, that's...
Hey, actually, wait a minute, Mr. Taxman, as that song
it's
went.
It's funny, when you look at this Namibia team, right, and if we have a look at the Namibia team,
mm-hmm.
almost all of them are mentioned in Beatles songs somewhere or another.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So, Merrick Africa is obviously Mr. Taxman.
Go on, talk us through one or two of them.
So, obviously, what we have going on here in the team of the rugby players is... can you give me a moment?
Are you looking at who the Beatles are?
So, I know John. who are the other ones?
So, the other ones are George...
So, okay,
you know,
so there's
George,
a big...
One's called Ringo, and the other one's called Hugo Horn.
There's a big mistranslation. Hey Jude was actually Hey Johnny Redland Hayes, but it didn't scan, so they had to change it. So that's a big, yeah, regular one.
Jude's easier, it's one syllable.
Yeah, Michael McKenzie Silverhammer. Okay, I'm trying to do this off the top of my head, remembering the Namibian team of 2007 and also Beatles songs. This is a surprisingly difficult game.
Yeah,
that
I'm
I wish
kind of
I'd
struggling.
Prepared for. We're recording this close to midnight.
Yeah,
I've had a long
we're
day.
Hardcore.
I was at like 6 a.m. So, famously, you know when the Beatles sung Get Back to Where You Once Belong?
Yeah,
they were talking
was it
about.
Get Bock?
Yes, that's better than where I was going.
Yes, that's
get
what you were about
Bock.
To say.
Yes. You've got, I was going to say it was about Tina's Duplessis getting back on side. You've got Eleanor Rugby, which Corne Powell played. Right. So do you know what Eugene Yankees' nickname was?
What?
It was the Walrus.
Oh, was it?
Yes. So,
oh, nice, man.
Jock Berger played like he worked 8 days a week.
Okay, I think this joke is dead.
Thank you. Oh, God, I was trying so hard for you to cut that off.
Yeah.
Oh,
I probably should have done it a lot earlier.
So that Namibia team, right? They pick a weakened side.
Yeah.
It's not a full second 15, but it is weakened. There are players who should be playing, such as Vitboy, who are not playing.
Yeah. Heine Bock's playing fullback here. And you know what really surprised me? So I looked at this and thought like, oh, Heine Bock at fullback? That's a weird selection because he played there against France for like most of the game because of injury and he couldn't kick at all. Like that was his one weakness. Like he's a great runner with the ball. And I was like, I don't really see why I pick him at fullback because he's so good on the wing. Turns out like he was basically only a winger in the Rugby World Cup. Like he played most of his tests at fullback, which I did not realise.
Wow, I didn't realise that either.
But evidently, it's just one of those things of like,
actually, no, but then,
the
yeah,
step up to tier one rugby being so different.
Yeah. So Namibia also bring in, for his first Rugby World Cup start, Johnny Redland Hayes, who goes on to win 50 caps, be one of the most capped players in World Cup, playing 3 World Cups for them.
Legend.
The others as regulars, takes a conversion in that game in Leicester in 2015 as well,
yes.
In his last game.
Against Argentina as well, wasn't it?
Against Argentina as well. So that's the other thing, right? First time we've covered this fixture on the podcast, but a fixture that has been played 3 times in Rugby World Cups when the record is 4 times overall for most commonly played fixture.
Is that Wales, Fiji or Wales, Australia?
Wales, Australia and France, New Zealand.
Okay. Oh, of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
And England, Australia actually as well.
Yeah, Johnny Redland Hayes is an absolute legend of Namibian rugby. He's a fantastic loose head prop. Don't get me wrong, doesn't have a great time in this game, but it is what it is.
Yeah, we also have coming into the side another figure who becomes very notable as World Cups go on in Tina's Duplessis at number 8, has a fantastic World Cup for them in 2011.
Yeah, won loads of caps, eventually went on to play for Wasps as well. Really, really good back row forward he was.
Yeah, and perhaps most excitingly, once you've seen the game, but not beforehand, at fly half, Morne Schreider.
I fucking love this guy. I became obsessed with him throughout this game. I was having to practice so much restraint to not text you in the middle of this, talking about how much I absolutely adored Mornay Schrider.
He is just a law unto and of himself.
It takes a lot to fill Emil Vessel's boots, because he's a fly half who we've both gravitated to, because he's got that Andaman Rowe factor to him, Emil Vessels, I think, which we've both really warmed to in these last few games. And Mornay Schrider, as much as, like, you can tell in this game that he's actually a pretty decent fly half.
Yeah.
But there is simultaneously something of the Serafino Gizzoni to him.
Ooh, okay. I thought he was more in line with the one, the only Ramil Gajcin.
Oh my God. What a huge comparison that is.
I mean, regular listeners to this podcast will know how high praise that is.
Yes.
Not regular listeners to the podcast will go, who?
Who?
Having
Ramil Gajcin is one of my favourite fly halves in the world.
Yeah, having forgotten the player that Russia brought in 3 games into their World Cup campaign in 2019.
Oh, mate. When we get to that World Cup, I'm obsessed with it. I'm fixing that so he's player of the tournament.
Yeah.
You thought the thing with the dogs was bad.
Look, we'll get into this, but like, I became fascinated by Mornay Schrider as the game went on.
I love him.
And yeah, in the exact same way that we did with Ramil Gajcin watching him play against Ireland.
Yes.
Where he approaches this match in a very particular way, and he will play the game in his style, and he will not compromise.
Yes, absolutely.
And his Namibia's. Like, yeah,
no.
He is not playing to the game. He's come in with his own game plan and gone, yeah, we're doing this now. And they've gone, what's that? Can we have a look at your game plan? He's gone, no.
Mate, I'm itching to start talking about Namibia's kicking game in this. What the fuck? let's quickly talk about everything else and then get into the game and talk about that, because
weaker Namibia side, but still full of plenty of, you know, very solid, very decent players. Argentina, yes. Los Pumas.
It's not a bad side they've put out.
It's pretty decent, isn't it? So Hernandez has picked up a niggle, so they move Felipe Contepomi into 10, with Manuel Contepomi coming in at 12, Gonzalo Tiezi at 13.
Yes, spicy.
Yeah. Hernan Senillosa comes in on the wing.
Yeah, I don't know him. I've not seen him play before.
Yeah, former Sevens player.
Then
converted this kind of World Cup cycle to play 15s. Converted for the 2003 World Cup, played in the 2003 World Cup, and kind of came in and out the team afterwards.
Okay. Yeah, he only got a few touches in this game, but he looked sharp. Pack-wise, they've got a few familiar faces in, like both Fernandez Lobe brothers, Juan Mugizamon. Go on.
I want to throw up something. Do you know how Senillosa's career ended?
How? Did he go absent?
No. So, in the semi-final of the Argentine League, a few years after this, you know, in 2010, he'd largely fallen out of favour for Argentina, but was still playing to a high level, you know, still kind of, you know, doing all right. He spent his entire career playing locally, never went to play in France, never went to play in England, or anywhere overseas. He got into a fight with a referee at full time.
Yes,
which for a winger, good going.
Yeah, very good going. We'll obviously talk about it. I'm very surprised Gus Picho didn't have the same fate in this game.
He got banned for 52 games for his fight with a referee. So he came back, got injured in his first game and retired.
Oh, mate, that's rough.
Which is kind of karma.
Oh, that's rough. But also, yeah, you can call it fate or you can call it karma, can't you? Man, that's kind of funny. Before we go on to the game itself, I want to quickly mention the very start of the coverage. It transitions from the end of the England-Samoa game we covered last week, because they had the 2 games on back-to-back, clearly on the Saturday. Once the Samoa game finished, this one started, right? And they had Martin Bayfield going like, oh, you know, it was an okay England performance against Samoa, and now we move on to the next game. And in the most 2007 way, fans of music from the mid-noughties, particularly Indie Landfill, will have picked up on the fact that the song that was playing at the start was the Enemy's single, This Song Is About You. The chorus of that was soundtracking the start of this. So not even one of their 2 hits, like one of the kind of like slightly lesser singles.
So I am, yeah, fascinated, obsessed by rugby matches that start like episode of The Inbetweeners.
Yes, it is such an Inbetweeners song and band. The only reason why I know like that and their songs is because my mates once supported them. It was like the first gig I ever went to was The Enemy. And then they broke up and everyone was like, oh, they're definitely not just doing this so they can get back together in a few years and milk the one good album they made to get a load of money out of it. And guess what they've done? Exactly that.
However, right, when you're saying, speaking of music from the noughties,
yeah,
I thought you were going to be bringing up Omar Hassan.
What does he have to do with anything?
Was he
in the Fratellis or something?
We haven't talked about Omar Hassan on this podcast, have we?
Okay, no, we haven't.
Because I feel like we would remember this.
Okay.
Omar Hassan, right? International rugby player. Makes his debut for Argentina in 1995. Misses out on the squad for the 1995 World Cup. Goes to 99, goes to 2003, goes to 2007, where he retires from rugby after this. Mm-hmm. He's playing for Toulouse at the time. Signed for Toulouse in 2004, off the back of the 2003 World Cup, up until he'd been playing for Argen.
Mm-hmm.
Plays 87 games for Toulouse, retires from rugby at the end of the season. Do you know why he retires from rugby?
To become a musician?
Well, yes. So, his final match was the 2008 Top 14 final, right? Toulouse win it. They also, you know, he wins the Heineken Cup along the way as well. He wins the Top 14.
And then he co-wrote Sex on Fire by the Kings of Leon.
No. So, he retires because he has been getting increasing offers as a baritone.
What?
So, Omar Hassan, former Argentina prop, right? This is genuinely true.
This can't be right.
Now performs opera for a living in Toulouse.
Oh my god.
He released an album as well in 2013.
No. We have to review
described
this.
As a mix of tango with elements of Argentine folk music.
Oh my god.
Now,
the sheer contrast between what him and Ronnie Roncero, who retired to become a boulder, have done post-rugby.
Well, so he wrote a book as well, which is in French, so it's quite hard, but it's called something like The Music of Rugby. So yes, so his book, The Music of Rugby, right, the blurb reads, from Argentina to France, from rugby to singing, an exceptional journey. Ex-right pillar tired prop for the Argentine Pumas, Omar Hassan has imposed his robustness and technicality on lawns around the world. Sounds like he just hates gnomes.
I was going to say, Bob Simmons just gets a slight bit in earshot.
His robustness and technicality on lawns.
He
plays bowls. After cutting his teeth in New Zealand and Australian clubs, it was in France that he settled down to build a career. First with Auch, then with Argen, before finishing in style with a championship title. Europe and France for Stade Toulousain. From now on, it is the performance halls that vibrate under the notes of the rugby player who has become a baritone. Music lover since always. Singer for his friends and teammates. Omar Hassan, you had to take the turn of the successful reconversion, which is, I wonder if that's also the phrase in France. I wonder if that's a pun on conversion. Mm. I don't know. And occurs everywhere in France. He occurs everywhere in France. There's just constantly this massive Argentine guy belting out.
Every time you look in a window, you can see him in the reflection. Trying to break the glass.
There he is, belting out some Puccini. Bloody the magic flute constantly.
I can't believe we've finally found the link between Johnny Redlinghays and Jean-Michel Jarre.
The greatest pleasure of all amateurs of music. Here he recounts his unique journey from the ropey pitches to the opera stays, distilling the values that drive him: perseverance, probability, and generosity.
I have to listen to his album.
Yes, we have to find it. And if his book wasn't in French, I'd love to read it. There's also a podcast of him talking through it, which I wanted to try and listen to, but like, it's in French.
Yeah,
so
I'll still give
it's
it
a nightmare
listen.
To do. Yeah. But honestly, the fact that Argentina had a tight head who is a professional baritone.
That's genuinely so unprecedented.
Yep.
That does sound like you could have made it up, you know? It does sound like Professor Bill Reynolds, who was an extra in Educating Rita, you know? That does sound like something you have made up.
There is a clip of him on YouTube that I haven't watched yet, and I suggest we both... I'm going to send this to you, and I suggest we both watch it now and react live
okay.
on the podcast. Okay. Maybe we can put it in the background. So what you're about to hear in the background as we hear this live is actually recorded last year.
Okay.
So he's still going on.
Okay. He sounds great.
Yeah, a lot like a violin. Or piano.
That's Omar Hassan. This is the tight head from this game.
65 caps he's got.
He's brilliant.
He is.
I'll pause it there for now because I think we get the message, but that's great.
He basically, right? People kept telling him he had a great voice whenever they do singing stuff in rugby settings. At which point he went, okay, I'll go for a professional lesson and just see how good my voice is. And they were like, holy shit, mate, you're amazing. And like after a few lessons, like he did like a few months of
wasted
lessons,
on Sweet Caroline like, in the showers.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever the Argentine Sweet Caroline is. So he then gets drafted in to do opera. After like a few months of singing lessons, because they're like, you're incredible. We're going to train you to use this properly.
Oh, man.
When asked about his favorite thing about performing opera, he said, maybe my favorite thing is I don't wake up with any back pain or the type of pain I did after a rugby match.
I mean, fair enough. I tell you what, as post-rugby careers go, it's a little bit better than going into tax accountancy.
Yes, of the two post-rugby careers we've dived into today,
yeah,
I think he's got the more interesting
one. This one's a bit
more
of a shock.
Yeah, I feel like we should have spent longer on this one than the other one.
Yeah, I think we probably have now.
But, I mean, it's a hell of a story.
That's incredible. I never would have known that.
When we come to 2003 and 99, we get to talk about him again.
Yeah, we get to listen to more
cover
of his work.
Once again, Omar Hassan, the the opera baritone.
Oh,
some
man.
Some tight head prop.
What a combo that is.
I know. It's genuinely astonishing.
Forget Andrew Sheridan playing the guitar and forming a band if England lose to Samoa. This fella, Omar Hassan, went and did it, got the t-shirt.
Or, you know, the suit with all the ruffles, as it were.
Yes. Broke the glass.
And to be fair, that glass ceiling exists for quite a long time. People have been saying no rugby players can become opera singers.
It's true. It's true. And you know what? I was willing to agree with them. I thought they were right.
And yet, here we are. Here we learn so much.
How this humble pie tastes.
I'm so glad we got to hear him because he's genuinely exceptional. Like, that's great. So that's good. Like, that's an amazing voice. That's really good.
Like, fair play. They were right when they were like, you sound pretty good, actually. Yeah. They were right. They were right.
Yeah. So that's Argentina's team. I really like the stadium as well. Obviously, it's the Stade Vélodrome in Marseille.
Yeah, I love it.
Which is a famous stadium, yes. One which we will both attend later this year, which I'm very excited about.
I think that's the stadium I'm most excited to go to.
Mm. It's the fact that it is a sort of modern-style stadium where the fans are so close to the pitch.
Yeah. It looks great. The atmosphere's great, though, whenever like Toulon played their big European finals over there and stuff. Like, it looks both hostile and just roaringly loud, and it's great. I love the look of it. Weather looks immense over there as well.
Yeah, that's all right.
World Cup time of year, so that should be good.
There's a couple of interesting things that Bob Simmons brings up in commentary early on as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that Namibia have both the tallest and the shortest man of the tournament in their team, in Heinie Bock and Nico Esterhazer.
Yes.
And so Felipe Contepomi playing 10. This is the 20th start him and Peach have had together as 9 and 10, which is solidity to have when your first year of 10 is ruled out.
Damn right, yeah. And one of the form players in the whole tournament in Hernandez is out, and they can still just fall back on this and have a solid centre combo to back it up.
Yeah. And the thing is, right, we talked about the pressure on Argentina and how they were, perhaps this was seen as quite a big deal for them that they had to put them to the sword a bit, you know, and there's pressure on them to score big margins, not just win. And also the bonus point, because potentially if they got the bonus point here, it basically puts them in a position where beating Ireland guarantees them the group without doubt.
Yeah.
There's nothing France can do. The bonus point puts everything in their own hands, which was something Picho after the game was very like set on, was we want our destiny in our own hands. We didn't want to worry about the other team.
Necessary given France have had the kick up the arse after losing to Argentina.
Yeah, because France's performances go up so drastically just step by step.
Yeah, for sure.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
As the game starts, it becomes very clear where Argentina are going to dominate, because the very first scrum leads to Omar Hassan using all of that, the power that is inside his soul and his belly, to win the ball back at scrum time. And at that point you go, oh, this is going to be very one-sided.
Yes. I want to make one note quickly, right? So the BBC's live text coverage states the Argentines are singing decidedly very off-key about the anthem. One of them wasn't.
21 of the Argentines were.
One of them wasn't. How dare you criticise Omar Hassan, the greatest opera singer of the modern age.
Yes, honestly, to ever come out to lose/Argentina.
So, Argentina, I thought, actually belt out the anthem pretty well to say it's not a big game. Like, there's not the reason to cry, but you know, it's a good,
it's
good,
just a
good solid
anthem.
Good solid anthem.
And so's Land of the Brave. They're both such good anthems.
So this is my hot take, right? I think the Argentina and Wales anthems are, if performed well, the best anthems. Where I think, like, from
and
a standing start, yes, they're good in the same category. From a standing start, I think Ireland's Call and Le Marseillaise are better anthems.
They're bangers.
But when performed at their best, Land of My Fathers and the Argentine anthem, which name I have forgotten, I apologise, are both like almost unbeatable in terms of the level of passion they can generate when properly by a crowd.
I'm a sucker for Flower of Scotland.
Flower of Scotland is like a standing item. Anytime it's played at Murrayfield, it is the best anthem in rugby.
It is.
When it's played at not Murrayfield, it's all right.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough way of putting it, yeah.
Where like Ireland's Call, I think, is like an 8 out of 10 every time. But I don't think you'll ever get a rendition of it.
It's just a banger. It's just a banger. It's just fun. And
but you'll get
10
out of 10s.
Will know that I love the Romanian anthem as well.
Yes. It's epic.
It's a banger.
It's like Hans Zimmer wrote a national anthem.
Exactly. Or Jean-Michel Jarre.
Yes. So, right, the game gets underway. And there is this sort of funny period at the start of, as I said, Argentina, massive pressure on them a little bit. And they kind of don't click at first. There's sort of 10, 15 minutes of them sort of tripping over themselves and things not working. And
spilling ball in the opposite half.
Yeah, and maybe you do the thing they did to Ireland and a little bit to France really well. Mm. Or they certainly did, you know, to Ireland throughout 90% of the game and to France for 10% of the game. They managed to do it to Argentina for sort of the first 10 minutes-ish.
Yeah.
And so when they take the lead, when they kick that penalty on 7 minutes, it feels hugely deserved that they get the lead.
Definitely, yeah. And that comes off them making a line break off a turnover. Like, it's them backing up good D with good attack. They spread it to Mouton on the wing. And there's a no-arms tackle on him because that's Argentina's best way of stopping the attack. And so at that point, that's worth 3 points. That's just a great conversion of great D to great attack to points. And you're right, they deserve to be leading for 7 minutes.
Yeah, it's genuinely, Namibia are excellent for about 8 or 9 minutes. And that sounds like faint praise, Schreuder, but I mean it wholeheartedly.
Puts his foot through that ball as well. Like, from 40-odd metres out, it's a brilliant strike.
Yeah. Like, he hits it really cleanly, and it sort of fades that second, like, in a way that's very clearly deliberate.
Yeah. Written down who needs Emil Vessels.
Nobody when you've got Morné Schreuder.
No.
So, yeah, Namibia take the lead. However, I did know the final score going into this. So, realizing they've scored 3 points already. So, ooh, they've got 63 unanswered points to come.
Yeah, that's
tough one. Tough one to look up, see the scoreboard, and know what's coming.
Yeah, meanwhile, as Contepomi slotted that opening penalty, I was like, this is anyone's game.
Yeah.
Don't know the score. This is anyone's game. Could go either way.
So, I mean, it's also like, Kazakh Gombaze pulls a player's hair?
Like, right.
The Contepomi opening penalty is for a hair pull.
Yes. There's something really interesting that happens around this. So it's, yes, because Ombiaz, he pulls, I think it's Gus Pichot's hair. I assume that because he has the longest and most flamboyant hair in the Argentine team. I'm not really sure who else it would be other than maybe like Corletto, I suppose. But after that penalty is given, TMO has a chat with his touch judge or whatever to just say, just a penalty and maybe a bit of a warning. And they're like, yeah, okay. I'll give him a bit of a warning just to say, don't do that again. Okay. So he calls over Kazombiaz and says, look, do not do that again. You've pulled his hair. That's really dangerous. You shouldn't do that. At which point, Augustin Pichot also walks over to Kazombiaz and says, yep, you shouldn't do that. That's really dangerous. You're not allowed to do that, mate, or else you might get sent off. And Pichot starts lecturing like he's the referee. And the absolute balls on that man. Firstly, that totally shows that he's going to end up going upstairs in the ILB.
Yeah, exactly. That's got like senior management written all over it, hasn't it?
And secondly, I straight away, this is like 8 minutes into the game, wrote him in my man of the match section because I was like, holy shit, I love that. He just went up to the opposition captain and told him off and joined in the referee on his warning of an opposition player. I've
man
never
of the match
seen
rather than dick of the day,
that.
Though.
Yeah. I'm a scrum half, mate. Deal
fair
with
point,
it.
Fair point. Okay. So, well, so Contepomi knocks over the penalty, fairly straightforward, and brings it to free all.
Pichot told a guy off. It's so good. So it evens up. It's 3-3, right? And we then get to a stage where Namibia go like, all right, tight game then, lads. We need to do something about this. We need to get in their half, right?
Well, so I think there's two key things that happen for Namibia, right? They go, this is a tight game, this is a close game, this is back and forth, this is like, there's not much space on the field, it's free all, that's clearly going to be the kind of game it is by full time still.
Yeah.
We need to target two key areas. So they put, from about like the 7th or 8th minute onwards, they put enormous pressure on an emphasis on their kicking game and on the breakdown.
Yes.
So we have, for like the first 20 odd minutes of the game, maybe the full first half, Michael McKenzie, Tinus du Plessis, Jacques Berger, absolutely phenomenal at the breakdown.
Mm.
The amount of work they do, spoiling Argentina's ball, winning clean turnovers. Michael McKenzie gets 2, I think. And then Tinus du Plessis is an absolute thorn in the side. Like, that back row are superb at just ruining the ball and getting really, like, slowing them down. And I think it's a big part of why Argentina don't fall ahead for, you know, quite a long afterwards. But the other factor that's huge for them is the kicking game of Morné Schreuder.
Yes. Do you want to know a statistic about the Namibian kicking game?
I would love to hear one.
So it's currently a big trend that we've discussed a lot in modern rugby, kicking on the front foot, you know?
Yes.
And the reason why that's such a big trend is because back three players are pulled out of position because they're anticipating a line break. And if you get the ball to bounce, we all know that the bounce of a rugby ball is really difficult to deal with. It can go all over the place. It buys the chasing team loads of time to get in the face of the opposition. And it means the fullbacks are under loads and loads of pressure, right? Do you want to know in which minute Namibia have a kick that bounces for the first time?
Oh, no. I'm going to guess 68.
40. So okay. The first minute of the second half, they have their first and second kick bounce. And that is literally because Melrick Africa puts in a grubber and his first touch in the second half. And then Corne Powell then goes for a cross field, which bounces. Basically, in terms of actual, like, either clearance kick or territorial kicking, their kicks just do not bounce at all. They're all fielded or go wrong.
The thing that I love about Morne Schreider as a rugby player, based on this one game that I've seen him play, based on the 73 minutes I've seen him play, is in this game, I firmly believe he is 1 yard on every single kick he makes. If every single kick he makes is just 1 yard, you know, in a different direction, off putting in one of the all-time great Rugby World Cup final performances.
Like, I love his
every kick is either 1 yard longer or 1 yard shorter or 1 yard further to the left or right.
It makes or breaks.
He's torn it up. Yeah. Like, it is. Namibia are winning this game thanks to a masterminded performance by Morne Schreider.
It's the fact that he outright refuses to kick the ball anything other than absolute pinpoint next to the touchline. Yeah. It's like every single one must hit the blade of grass that is perfectly next to the touchline. And when he hits two out on the full in like 2 minutes in his first like bit of good possession, he just goes, okay, well, that's fine. I'm going to keep doing that.
Yeah, Morne Schreider.
He's not willing to bring it 5 minutes.
He falls out on the full in the first 17 minutes.
And they're all great kicks.
Then puts a fourth out a few
thing.
Minutes afterwards.
Like, you look
and
at them
then
all.
A restart out on the full.
Yeah, yeah. You look at all of those and go like, oh, but you see what he's doing there, don't you? Like, that's
on
actually
every single one.
Technically a really good kick and a really good idea.
Every single one. If there's half a yard less on it, it lands half a yard to the left rather than the right. It is bouncing and it is like a 50-22 kind of deal. It is like trapping Argentina on their own line.
Like,
from
the first
like 50 metres back.
The first one I wrote, Schreider kicks on the front foot, out on the full, unlucky. And I'm going to cross out the word unlucky there, because that's just not what it was. Because when he does his second one, you go, damn it, Schreider, I'm really rooting for you here, because you're doing the right things here, mate. Like, you've done exactly the same kick again.
You just want him to get one of them, don't you?
Yeah.
But by the time he's putting like his sixth kick out on the full, there's like a genius spot and he's so close to the execution, but every single one is going out on the full. You're kind of like, mate, you've got to learn the lesson at some point.
Just put it on the 5 meter line and get out of there.
Just like hang it in the air. It's all right. No one will think less of you for the fact that you went for one slightly less ambitious kick.
It's every single time he goes, right, okay, this is literally landing on the corner flag. Every single time. And he never swallows his pride and goes, yeah, I'm just gonna put this just behind the winger, all right?
But it's like watching Ronan O'Gara play after two glasses of sherry. Like, the way that he is so close to having this unbelievable, phenomenal, all-time great kicking performance, and every kick is a yard off. It's just a few inches off. I'm obsessed with it as an achievement by him.
I'm going to just read out like 5 or 6 lines of my notes to save us a bit of time talking about other things, and then we'll get back onto this, okay? Because I don't think some of these things don't deserve conversation, okay? Mouton tries to have a crack, doesn't work. Argentina drive for line. Felipe Grovis for Manuel, who asks the referee whether or not he grounded it himself. No try, boring. Felipe, 6-3. No, Schreuder, I really want you to do well. Stop kicking out on the full. Then, just in block capitals, Schreuder puts it on the money! That's my boy! Because there's one incredible 50-22 he does. And it's like, that's what he's been trying to do all game. Why is he still doing it? I know he nailed
so
it, but why?
I love that he doesn't learn at all.
I know. And this one
and he goes for this,
it's
like,
incredible.
Stupidly ambitious restart as well. After yeah. that, I think it is, I don't know, I think it's after Argentina's first try by Ronny Montero, where he goes for this, like, trying to drop it exactly on a sixpence where the winger's following. And obviously it goes into touch. They get the scrum, Argentina, which they batter because their scrum is completely on top by about the second scrum. But hey, I appreciate the sheer ambition and backing himself of everything he does on a rugby pitch.
Oh, God, I love him. God, I love him. He's convinced he's Mornay staying in his peak form.
Yeah.
And it's just great to watch.
He will not be told otherwise. And it is absolutely wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also played the 2003 World Cup, so I'm really excited to hear about him again.
Now?
Yes.
Hello.
So he was quite kind of, I guess, the more aged fly half
here. Please tell me they were in England's pool. Please. Please tell me he played against Johnny Wilkinson.
I believe they played Argentina as well in that tournament.
Oh, did they?
You want to know his biggest claim to fame?
What?
Mornay Schreider. And we're going to get to this eventually on the podcast.
Okay.
He was the fly half in one of the most famous games of rugby ever played, especially in the World Cup.
Okay. I'm happy for you to not tell me anymore because we're going to get to this.
No, because we're not getting this for a few years.
Okay.
He was at 10 when Australia won 142-0.
Oh, no.
How many kicks is he putting out on the fourth in that game?
I bet he was about 11 inches away from the score being the other way around.
Yeah. From absolutely turning it on against Gitto as his opposite number.
Mate, what a player, Mornay Schreider.
I'm obsessed with him, love him, I'm probably going to forget him, but I hate that.
Oh, man.
The amount of cult heroes we built up in 87, and I've just forgotten them all.
Yeah.
Except for Superboot. Superboot is eternal.
Superboot is certainly eternal. No, there's definitely more. I just need to actually think about it a little bit.
Sure.
So, the opening try the game scored, it's an open field maul try. You say Ronny Roncero scored it. I had no idea who scored it watching it live.
Yeah, me neither. I had to check the team sheet. Or not the team sheet even, check the, you know.
I don't have anything to say about this try.
No, just, you know, it's Argentina finally managed to get a maul going in open play, which, you know, the fact they're embracing that as a tactic, go for it more because it is good. And that could come back. You know, I wonder why more teams aren't doing that.
Yeah.
When you've got teams whose best attacking weapon is the maul, why aren't you setting mauls in play?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. But again, don't really have much to say about it on top of that.
No.
Argentina have a massive pack, so obviously that's going to work. So respect.
Yeah.
So not long after, there's a couple of other, like, good points. There's one where Contepomi makes this nice break, goes full fid him and drops it. There's a great point where Argentina are given a penalty and Pichot goes up to Stuart Dickinson to start complaining. And Dickinson just goes, don't even start to it. Shuts him up. And I just loved it. I took a tally of how many complaints Augustin Pichot made in the first half and I got to 7.
You know that Pichot learnt 4 languages so he complained to referees in all their first languages.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love how much of a shit Pichot becomes in this game. Beforehand, like, he's a scrum half, you know, so you have to expect a level of it. But he went full turbo cunt in this game and I absolutely loved it. Because he knew there was no consequences. He's the captain and his team's absolutely battering them.
The etymology of the word Pichot comes from small. In like an old Italian language. And he is the definition of small man syndrome as well.
As a pure compliment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like nothing but.
Yeah. Corletto hits this absolutely gorgeous line at one stage off Contepomi.
Oh.
It's so good.
It's absolutely wonderful, the line he hits. Like borderline pornographic, I had written. Like, it's glorious the way he comes out, hits the line so flat. Like, as Namibia drifting hard, straightens, beautiful, beautiful, but then begins a theme throughout this entire game of Corletto absolutely bombing chances once he's done the hard bit.
Yeah. But there's a point later on where, spoilers, like 60 minutes in, Corletto scores, right? And there's a point where it's like, finally, fucking hell, you've finally done it. Like, I spent that entire, like, first 20 minutes of the second half just like, Jesus Christ, can Kolesi just score already? Like, yeah. We just really need to get that bit of the game out of the way. Because we knew he was going to. Like, it was inevitable he was going to, even though he low-key played kind of shit by his standards.
But that's but it. Like, he keeps breaking the line and doing the hard bit, and then the moment it's just delivering a simple pass to someone stood right next to him, he just can't feed it.
That pass into touch was horrid.
Unforgivable.
He skins someone on the outside, has a Gujarat marked outside him, and just lobs it about 6 feet above his head.
The thing is, it looks like he's able to
like
touch
3 meters ahead of him.
Goes over the touch judge's head.
Goes above the advertising hoardings.
Yeah. Lands in the stands.
Yeah.
It's like, the pass goes where he's aiming, he just doesn't aim anywhere at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, on that one where he hits the line, like, weirdly, on first viewing, I thought, like, he was too unselfish and, like, tried to step inside and link up with somebody and find a supporting player. But, again, like, I just think he was very much expecting to score in one way or another. I don't know. Yeah. But it's eventually fine because Namibia aren't exactly keeping hold of the ball, so...
No. One thing from this period where Argentina are basically living in the Namibian 22, which is sort of 20 minutes onwards.
Mm.
But we start to see the rise of a tactic that I don't think happens nearly commonly enough.
Okay.
Where we've talked great deals on this podcast and elsewhere of our love of the crash ball 10.
Yes.
Andre Pollard, Ander Monroe, you know, Soumaya Bai of Fiji, who come up in next week's episode. All sorts of wonderful, wonderful fly halves whose first instinct is to take it in like a number eight. Right? We don't talk enough about what Kontopomi does a few times, which is the latch 10. Where he's a fly-off who goes in on the latch of a forward as they're waiting to carry to the line.
Yeah.
When do you ever see that?
That's such a good point. And weirdly, there's some value to it.
Yeah.
Because the 10's always the closest player to the forwards.
Yeah.
Like, so sometimes you see a ball playing 12 who does that really well, you know.
Yeah.
You can adapt to that. Like, you look at when, like, Robbie Henshaw plays 12,
superb,
for example.
Robbie Henshaw, great example.
Like, because Henshaw can equally play in the boot or play as a latcher or, you know, and clear out rucks and stuff. Yeah, it's actually quite a valuable skill.
Mm. Rare to see a fly half doing it.
Yeah.
Like, Finn Russell or George Ford aren't doing it, are they?
No, absolutely. Was there a point you were going to make alongside that, or just not?
No, just I thought it was interesting. I thought it was an interesting and funny thing.
Yeah.
I say how frequently, it happened like 3 times, plus maybe more I wasn't paying attention to.
Do you want to know another really good tactic?
Mm.
Have dominant scrum, have big number eight, get him to just pick up and run directly at the opposition's smallest player until they step out the way.
Yeah, and I mean, it is very effective.
Yeah. With Leguizamon playing eight and the business decision Africa makes.
So this is phenomenal
work.
Yeah. 5 meter scrum, Argentina completely dominant, driving over towards the line. Leguizamon goes slightly early because they probably could have just dotted down straight in front of him if he'd waited a moment longer. He said picks and goes, runs straight at Africa, who doesn't quite step out of the way, but he does go, I'm just going to stand here. If you want to go either side of me, be my guest.
Yeah. So diversion, footpath this way.
Yeah.
Points both ways.
It's like he put down the sign saying, caution, wet floor. Yeah. And that was his defensive tactic. So Leguizamon does the tiniest step.
Yeah. With Leguizamon in front of me, I'd done the same.
Like, yeah.
Oh, sorry, lads. Just got dusted off there. I'm on my own line, but just got absolutely cleaned off.
Bob Simmons mentions on comms that his nickname at London Irish, where he was playing at the time, before everything that's happened with London Irish since, was the Spaniard. Which, because he speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So make what you will of that. So Leguizamon crashes over, and it is then almost immediate that Argentina get back down. And Manuel Kontopomi does get his try after being disallowed one moments earlier. Not moments earlier, but not that long ago. Not that long ago.
Yeah, Argentina go wide. Juan Martín Fernández Lobbe has a really nice touch in there where he draws a couple of men in and sets Senilosa free on the right flank.
And then it's a really nice kind of overs line by Kontopomi to get on the outside.
Yeah.
When I think the natural instinct is to straighten and try and give to Senilosa on his outside. No, it's Uguja, right? On his
Uguja,
outside.
Yeah.
But instead, he fades on the outside and managed to get there himself. Some may say it's the selfish option, which he's learned from his brother. I would say, no, it's a good option that he has taken well.
Yes, I agree, because he's putting the most pace on the ball by doing that. You know, by fixing a man, naturally he has to slightly slow it down by releasing the ball from his hands and, you know, adjusting to the space and stuff. Whereas actually he's just put the most pace on the ball and dives straight in the corner. He knows he's quicker than the man next to him.
Yeah, he finishes it himself. Yeah. You know, really clean, really nice, really good finish.
Yeah, which makes the score 25-3 approaching half time. The last point I have written in the first half is, once again, to go back to my boy Gus Pichot, there's a point where the referee calls a scrum and Gus Pichot, you can hear him on the mic, calling Argentina ball. Saying, yeah, it's Argentina's put in, as the Namibian nine, Yanchis, is about to, like, is looking for the ball, like, wanting to put it in himself. And Pichot goes, no, Argentina ball in this scrum. And it's just great shithousery, thinking he's genuinely the ref.
The one other note I have on the first half is another wonderful Bob Simmonsism. Because we talked, look, Bob Simmons explained what was in front of him. He did not assume anything of the crowd, of the audience watching him at home. He didn't ask anything of them. He was just a professional. To the extent that when talking about Jacques Berger, he says he is nicknamed Sideshow Bob. And then pauses for a moment and says, after the character from The Simpsons.
Yes.
Which
I greatly enjoyed that.
Absolute height of The Simpsons kind of prowess and popularity. Yeah. Or not quite high, because the height was probably 3 or 4 years earlier. But still at a point where it was everywhere.
Yeah.
The Simpson.
Everyone knows what The Simpsons is.
Yes. Particularly in this era. You know, you might find children nowadays, bloody kids don't know they're born, bloody never seen Santa's Little Helper, don't even know what a comic book guy is. No, if you were living in 2007, you knew who Sideshow Bob was.
Yeah. Best Namibia player ever.
Nice. So, we get to halftime. I think Namibia are really difficult to work out how you feel about that half.
Yeah.
Because they were really strong for 25 minutes and kept Argentina without a score or without a try. Kept 6-3. And then kind of capitulated. And like the scores they were conceding were worrying ones, because it was being completely dominant at the scrum. It was them getting outside you. It was them breaking. It was, you know, Maul. They were all things that it's really difficult to fix quickly.
Yes. Yes. Keith Lensing is brought on at halftime to try and fix that scrum. He's the captain, isn't he?
Corny Powell was captain for this game.
Yes.
Keith Lensing was the squad captain.
Yeah, so he comes on. And there is another extremely telling moment that tells you a lot about something that Hakkies Husselmann said at halftime. As the first kickoff of the second half, Schroeder chips it. And like it goes really, really short. And clearly Husselmann said to him, like, right, okay, you need to be a lot less ambitious with these kicks. You need to like really just start putting them a lot shorter. So just to really piss him off, Schroeder just goes, all right, I'll only kick it like 5 meters then. Is that what you wanted? And clearly like turns to the coach's box afterwards and she goes, yeah, is that what you wanted then? Means you just chip the kick off. Barely went anywhere, mate. And then that's the only kick he puts like that. And then after that, he starts trying to put it on a 6 minutes next to the touchline again.
I gave you what you wanted.
It says a lot about what he was told at half-time.
Are you happy now?
Yeah.
It does. It does. Though it also does not take Argentina long to just kind of, I mean, so call it a bomb's another one. It's, you know, his passing to touch. But Argentina win it back pretty quickly because they get so on top in the set piece. Yeah. And Felipe Contepomi goes full one-man team.
Yeah. It's great. The lines that Manuel Contepomi and Gonzalo Chiesi run off him are brilliant and really split the defence and open up that gap for Contepomi. But yeah, Felipe needs no second invitation to just take the ball and just go, oh, right, yeah, cheers, lads, and just run it.
Yeah. And he's the sort of player who, a bit like Sergio Parise, you kind of don't mind being quite a selfish player at heart.
Yes.
It is quite fun to watch.
It does
much
kind of
as
add something
easily,
to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't go missing in
very,
big games.
Very, very easily. No, never, never, never. But, yeah, he does have that streak of, like, if there's a choice between passing and not passing, he is not passing.
Yes,
if it's, you know, both are equally likely. And I love him for his ego. I love him for that sheer, like, unabashed ego that no one ever beat out of him quite successfully. And also led to him inspiring Jonathan Sexton, you know, as his kind of...
Of course, successor.
Sexton was very much his understudy while he was at Leicester.
Which is kind of mad to think, isn't it? But both extremely competitive, and it comes through.
It also means bonus point is in the bag.
Yes.
So immediately they bring off Picho, like that minute, the minute it goes over. Then right afterwards they bring off Leguizamon and Contopomi as well.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of the important spine of their team who will be playing in the first team are off at this point.
Yeah, the, other than Fernandez Lobby, because they can only bring one of the back rowers off because they haven't gone, you know, for ridiculous split on the bench. They just bring off the most important players.
They do, in fact, let Leguizamon score another try before pulling him off.
Oh, of course they do. Yeah, so he plays another 3 minutes, though, from here.
Yeah, yeah, it's not long. It's what I have written is bullshit Leguizamon try. They knock the ball on four times and he steps inside Lensing. Like, Argentina at this point are literally just fumbling the ball on the floor constantly until they eventually manage to ship it wide. It's bollocks.
The knock on in the lead up here is absurd. Right in front of the referee, Stuart Dickinson. I have no idea how they get away with it. But it's at that point where you're like, well, I can't complain because it's so obvious.
Yeah.
It'd never be allowed nowadays.
Exactly, exactly. I also have written down at some stage, Mouton gets penalised for trying to have a crack and not being Vit Boy. I'm not sure exactly what happened.
As he should be.
Yeah.
A lot of quick taps in this game.
Yeah.
Fernandez Lobby takes one. Peacher takes one, gets tackled immediately on the spot by Redlin Hayes, who gets aware of it and doesn't get penalised for it. And I've got enormous respect for that.
King shit that. King shit that. Then the floodgates just open massively for Argentina. Tiezi scores from one of those quick taps. It's essentially, they take a quick tap, they go through a couple of phases, they only have to go wide a couple of times, you know, work around the corner, extremely quick ball, Tiezi dives in the corner, very straightforward.
The pass by Aguja to him is absolutely sublime as well.
It's fantastic. It's like the first time he's gone off his wing.
Yeah, it's as he's drifting, he then throws this really flat ball. It's just like, it's a lovely thing that'll suck in any defense.
Yeah, for sure.
Really nice touch by him.
It's like the back's equivalent of that Roncero try we spoke about earlier. Like, there's not really much you can say about it other than just they played with so much pace and just worked to an edge. So there's not much you can really analyze about it.
Because Aguja is working outwards one way, then throws a pass that is so flat and so direct and fast, no one's got time to adjust to like the fact the ball is now headed the direction he was going so much faster. So it's just like it completely changes the way you've got to defend it twice. Very, very good. Very difficult skill as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Pauletto gets his try, finally.
He finally gets his try. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ, mate. You've been hanging around for that. Like, you finally scored. Jesus, now get off the pitch. And they do sub him off, like, basically as soon as he scores.
A minute later, yeah.
It's a nice try, though. Like, Leguizamon runs his hard line off Senaloso again off his wing and offloads back to him. And you go, oh, he can shift, can't he?
Yeah.
Senaloso has this really, really nice run. Again, they recycle the ball quickly. Basualdo, the hooker, who actually had a good game. We've not really spoken about him, but he was very, very solid. But he kind of fumbles the ball, but really keeps his composure, knowing that as long as I keep hold of this and throw a pass, and it's not terrible, I don't need to rush this at all.
Yes.
And he gives Coletto a walk-in.
Yeah, really, really nice stuff. And then we are flying through the tries, but it is basically Argentina scoring one after another here.
Yeah.
You know, they go on to score 11 tries over here, which I believe equaled their record for most tries in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
At least it's in the World Cup match.
With what you've just said, because I've got an interesting question for you about that. Mm. Have you ever been to a rugby game before?
Yes, I have.
You have?
One.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Why have you been to a rugby game before?
Oh, I was bored.
Oh, okay.
Just needed something to do as well from a train.
So, were other people at the rugby game that you've been to before?
Yeah.
Would you
Four
say
other people? It was at the Liberty Stadium. Woo.
Yeah. Would you say that the other people at this game potentially, I don't know, liked rugby?
I mean, liked is strong. Okay. Were willing to watch. Sure.
Okay. Because something I very quickly found out not long after the point we've just discussed is this crowd here in Marseille, beautiful part of the world.
Yes.
The guys that went to this game and the guys and the girls that went to this game, and there were 55,067 of them.
Yes.
They actually liked rugby.
And the colour blue.
And
the band blue.
So what I found out, the way I found this out.
And the blue who leaves clues.
Is because Argentina were given a scrum five and the crowd will go, go Argentina, put the ball down over the try line because that's my favourite part of rugby. And that's what they start chanting. Then they start really going for it and saying, Argentina, I really can't wait, because off the back of this, they're going to get 7 points, seven big points by putting the ball down over the try line. And Argentina set this scrum, right? And Omar Hassan himself is driving it forward and going, let's go, troops. We're going to score a try. We're going to score a bloody try. Let's go. We're going to score a try. We're still moving forward. Still moving forward. At which point, loud, shrill blast on the referee's whistle. And they all go, hold on. What's wrong with that? Are you penalising us? And the referee, when they look up, Stuart Dickinson is under the sticks and he's given a stupid penalty try. And the crowd all start booing him in unison and going, no, boo, we wanted rugby. We wanted putting the ball down over the try line. We didn't want penalty try.
You know what the classic mistake they've made there is?
What?
They said it in English. The Argentine team only speaks Spanish. If they chanted in...
Stuart Dickinson speaks English.
No, he doesn't.
Oh, point.
But look, Argentina needed to listen to him. Maybe they would have put the ball down. Maybe we would have been all right.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's also, classic, Stuart Dickinson, era. Do better, you know?
I do agree on that, though.
This crowd and Murray Mextead both like rugby, it turns out.
Yes.
Murray Mextead was fuming about that.
This is, of course, the only big controversial game and call that Stuart Dickinson makes during this World Cup that has, you know, ramifications that will be discussed years down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only,
yeah, it's the most famous iconic game he referees in this tournament.
Eugene Yanchi's hit a 50-22.
Yeah, good on him.
And it's like, oh, cool, the ball's bounced in like a territorial kind of way. Bounces in territorial, said the ball. Which is like the only time Namibia put in like a really good kick. Bless them.
Argentina get then weirdly sloppy after the penalty try, almost like they were put off by the crowd as well. And yeah, there's a lot of them just bombing tries out of nowhere. Almost like they just couldn't believe how well they were playing, how well they were, you know, putting these chances away on the whole. And yeah, suddenly, like, for 10 minutes, they're really sloppy and they're not able to finish anything. And they have so many chances to score that, you know, what would have been their kind of record-breaking, record-equaling try. And they just keep tripping over their own shoelaces or just dropping it. You know, it, like, Corletto disease just spreads.
Yeah, there really is a stench of that, isn't there? As they just start really slowing back down to kind of where they were at the start of the game. And Namibia are just like, okay, if you could just stay like this while we catch our breath, that would be brilliant. Cheers, lads.
However,
also, Tinus Duplessis gets his head bandaged in a way that makes him look like a traffic cone. Carry on.
Yes, he does. Federico Tonicini comes on. And this is where that changes.
Mate, this is mental. What happens
lovely,
here is mental.
Lovely stuff. He stabs through a lovely, well-weighted grubber. Aguja regathers, flings the ball in field to Tolicini, who somehow managed to march up the remaining distance and dive over just next to the post.
Federico Tolicini scoring a try?
Yeah.
Is mad. He was really emotional after he scored it as well. Probably because he'd had surgery in the week, which is mad. Yeah. Nearly got sent home, which they explained on commentary. But I choose to believe instead this is the first time Federico Tolicini has ever scored something that's not a drop goal.
So this was the third and final try he scored for Italy. He obviously scored the one in the man of the match performance against England in Twickenham in 2006.
For Argentina.
For Argentina. Before that, he scored one try on his fourth cap against Italy. And after that, just nothing.
Oh, bless him.
Like,
but it was cool to see him get on the score sheet.
But that's it. Like, but he played since the 90s. You know, he had a really long, protracted international career.
It tells you what kind of ten he was, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it does. In fact, he had a 10-year international career, scored 3 tries, and yeah, one of them was this against Namibia.
That's cool.
Against an Italy team that weren't quite there yet before they were in the Six Nations. So yeah, good on him. Good on him. I was made up for him watching how excited and delighted he was to score.
Absolutely. The try. Absolutely. When he'd had a tough week, especially. That's cool. Yeah, good on him, Federico Tolicini. We've gone through all of the interesting stuff that happens in the game, apart from maybe one thing near the end.
A dick of the day moment right at the end of the game, I think.
Does it involve Mornay Schroeder?
It involves the referee.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know the point you're about to talk about, so I'll just quickly explain one more thing about Mornay Schroeder.
Please.
He goes for an absolutely brilliant drop goal attempt while 63-3 down, and it literally landed in the last spot I expected it to, this drop goal attempt. I either thought he's going to absolutely like sink it, or it's going to like bounce into the touchline and land on the corner flag and be the kick he was aiming for all along when this is the one that's meant to go through the sticks, you know? I thought it would be one or the other, but instead it just kind of lands perfectly between the two. And he originally gets loads of height on it, and then it just sinks into the floor, and it's just really not aesthetically pleasing, but it was exactly how Schreuder's game deserved to be finished.
Absolutely gutted for him. He then gets brought off for the last few minutes.
Yeah, I felt sorry for him, because it's like,
yeah,
he looked quite gutted when he went off, and it's like, just so you know, it's not your fault that you've kind of played shit there. Like, you've not played shit, you've just been funny.
Yeah. Well, I suppose, like, his two starts in the Rugby World Cup, right, are a 142-0 loss and a 63-3 loss.
Yeah, it's not
a great loss. Quite rough, isn't it, to be 203 points down on, like, his aggregate scoreline in the World Cup is basically 200 points to three.
Which is not nice. But also, no. I think that the true starts in Rugby World Cups are the friends you make along the way, which are us, because we're now fans of him.
Yes, agreed. So, because we've got the Dick of the Day thing to come, should we move on to Dick of the Day and Man of the Match?
Let's talk about all of that stuff, because I think let's play Dick of the Day-ish things tennis, all right?
Yes.
Because I've got one lined up after you.
Well, so, on full time, right? The final play of the game, Namibia in the 20s, you're looking for their first try of the game. The crowd really, really behind them. Like, really loud. Like, loudest they've been all day. Other than there's a movie break in the first few minutes. But yeah, really loud, really vivacious. You can really hear there's a lot of blue in the crowd. And one of the Argentine players steps in, I think it's Tiesi, and does a deliberate knock-on, a really clear deliberate knock-on, sticks their hand in, knocks it down, whatever. Namibia don't recover it. On a clear overlap where they've got three men over, Tiesi's the last defender. You're looking at them at least getting up the try line, if not finishing this and scoring. Referee gives a knock-on full-time. Dick of the day to potentially Tiesi and definitely to Stuart Dickinson for not looking at that properly.
Yes. Is that your Dick of the Day, or that's just a contender? So I'm going to also throw back to your contender. I've not yet quite decided whether or not I'm giving it to this. And no prizes for guessing who I'm about to talk to you about or play a clip of.
Oh, I'm not going to guess if there's no prizes.
Yeah, it's Murray Maxted.
Been knocked on earlier. I remember when the great Muhammad Ali came to New Zealand many years ago, and a journalist asked him, he said, Muhammad, what do you think of our great All Blacks? He said, I don't know, but with a name like that, they got to be good.
Murray Maxted doing an impression of Muhammad Ali.
Okay.
Not a good look, is it?
Should we move on?
Yep. My Dick of the Day is not, in fact, Murray Maxted, but it is, in fact, Hakis Husselman for not picking Vitboy.
Okay, I understand that. I see that. I get it. I understand that.
But I did partially... There was a part of me that wanted to affectionately give it to Mornay Schreuder. Again, in a similar way to Serafino Gizzoni. Like, I'm not taking the piss out of him with the Dick of the Day that we gave to him, you know? That was purely done with love and affection. And I did kind of, and I still kind of do, even though I've just said it was Husselman. Can I change my vote?
That is who I was going to go for, is Mornay Schreuder.
Okay.
For exactly the reasons you say, right? This is a player who had it in him to put in one of the all-time great fly half performances. And he came up just short or just too long on every single part required.
And as a consequence, the final score was Argentina 63, Namibia 3.
Look, there's a chance that Namibia pull this off and it's like 21-17 or something if Schreuder's kicks all land perfectly. The thing is, none of them land perfectly.
Oh, I absolutely adore him.
He's
Can
like
I change my vote for
from
him's Dick
eight.
Of the Day, please? Yeah. Can you be my Dick of the Day? Thank you.
He's like, yeah, he's like 0-8, but all of them are so close.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He hits the rim on every single shot.
Mate, if this was done on percentages of like how close you were to it being bang on, then he'd be absolutely killing it. He outplayed Kontopomi.
Yeah. If you got points for hitting the rim, to use a basketball analogy, like he would be one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
But he's never sunk a basket.
Yeah. It's only fair that we immortalise him in the canon of the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospectives Awards.
Are we both giving him Dick of the Day?
Yes, we are.
But warmly.
Hakis Husselman, watch your back, okay? If you don't pick Vitboy again, you are actually getting it. It's a close shave, but yes. I say, I'm affectionately giving my Dick of the Day to Mornay Schreuder. I love him more for it.
And man of the match.
You go first on this. I'm interested.
Cool. Okay. I think there are a few contenders. I think Tiernan Duplessis, Michael McKenzie, Jacques Burger are really great for Namibia.
Like, yeah, really, the final score was 63-3 to Argentina.
I am mentioning them. Because it was 6-3 after 25 minutes. And there's another 10 minutes where they don't score. So, fine.
If you just decimate the Argentine scoreline.
I'm mentioning them in passing. I know, I'm not giving them dick of the day. You are a dick. Thank you. And of the day, this day, this is a different day to when we're recording it because it passed midnight whilst we were doing it, which is a good way to do a podcast. So, Felipe Contepomi, but I don't like it. Gus Picho, grand, fine. And I think for me, man of the match comes down to one of four people. It's just less than that. I was going to say
one
three.
One of
them is
Nico Westhazer.
So Horatio Guja, I think, is excellent, but kind of doesn't get involved enough. I think if he got a few more touches, maybe finished a try of his own, he'd be right up there for me.
That's fair.
But not I loved watching him. I thought he was fantastic in every involvement he had. Not enough of them.
That's fair.
Which kind of reduces you to three players. Ronnie Roncero, brilliant, dominates the scrum, finishes a try, superb.
Didn't sing enough opera, though.
Yep. Juan Manuel Leguizamon, also excellent, carries hard, scores two tries. But for me, the man of the match is Argentina's Juan Martin Fernandez Lobby.
Okay.
Who I just thought, again, every involvement, really good. Has that quick tap he takes to kind of bring pace into the game. Just understood what the game needed. Was, again, there wasn't much defending that needed doing, but he was there consistently. Makes two big turnovers as well, which are crucial. His kind of combination of handling and ball carrying, superb. I just thought,
I like that.
If I was doing player ratings based on what you expect from each player, he's the high, him or Roncero are the highest ratings. So maybe I should have given it to Roncero. Now I've talked about it, but hey, I felt Fernandez Lobby was probably on balance the best player on the pitch.
That's fair enough. I can't really argue much with that. He did all of the not quite flashy things very well. I think that's a fair enough person to give it to. Obviously, Gus Picho, for his sheer shithousery, has to be in the mix for me. But there was two players that I kind of was tossing up between. One of them being Juan Manuel Leguizamon for, again, he was just very solid at what you expect from him. Carried really well, scored a couple of tries. As you say, there wasn't much tackling to be done, but when there was, he was doing it. And the other guy was Gonzalo Tiesi, was
okay.
Absolutely,
yeah,
everywhere. Like, he was running really good lines, he was scoring tries, he assisted the one for Toscini. Like, so I think I'm going to give it to Gonzalo Tiesi.
Okay, cool.
Because I think he's a really underrated player who I really enjoy watching, and I think he's a real asset to this era of Argentina. So sure, Tiesi, my man of the match.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, that's fantastic. Also, just a quick mention for Omar Hassan.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny that we've not really mentioned either of our men of the match during the actual podcast, by the way. It's one of those games.
Yeah. One of those games. They just happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Yours scored a try, at least.
That's true.
Mine was a hardworking seven, you know, who just got one assist. But didn't do much. Yeah. So that brings us somehow to the end of another episode of the Squidge Rugby World Cup retrospective podcast. A rugby podcast that continues to exist despite popular demand. Please join us next week when we will be joined by Reg Roberts, the wonderful, excellent, superb Australian.
Reg himself.
Yeah. Literally every job in Australian rugby outside, like what they would call at rugby club themselves, non-rugby positions. I think he's held every single one.
I think so. Great guy.
Yeah, fantastic. A lot of fun, that episode. We may have already recorded it, but I couldn't possibly comment.
No, I've just been to the future and listened to it and tipped you off on that.
Oh, how is it? How is the future?
Yeah, it's really good, but I only went there for about an hour and 37 minutes to listen to that podcast.
Right, okay. That sounds like a good use of your time travel.
Less than that, actually, because it wasn't actually edited when I listened to it.
If the choice of time travel is kill baby Hitler or listen to a podcast with Reg Roberts, I know which one I would sleep better after doing.
Yeah, exactly. Great stuff. We've kept two episodes, a few episodes under 2 hours here. We're doing well.
Honestly, I can't believe we're finally doing this. We're finally keeping these episodes blue. We haven't finished yet, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There's a solid chance we do another half an hour on Kazeki Himeno's like jams that he's now making or something.
Yeah.
However, thank you very much. And Will, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers for listening. And I believe there's only one way we can possibly play ourselves out with the beautiful sounds of one, the only, Omar Hassan.
Oh shit, he's talking now.
He's chatting. Big little chat. Probably about scrums.
So he's doing comedy. That means sun.
Here we go.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.